About 620,000 Americans died in the Civil War, almost as many as in all other U.S. conflicts combined. Siblings and cousins fought on opposite sides of the war. I can barely imagine the anguish and pain that remained in people's hearts and marked their bodies after the war ended in 1865. Within the next year, some women in Columbus, Mississippi, decided to decorate the graves of Confederate soldiers. It is said that when they saw the graves of Union soldiers in that same area going untended, they thought about the deep sorrow in the hearts of Union mothers, too. And they took some of the flowers they brought and strewed them on the graves of Union soldiers, too. Compassion is sometimes at the root of our capacity to build bridges with those whom we've experienced as other, as enemy, or as stranger. There is controversy as to where the first local observance of what became Memorial Day occurred. Apparently, the first idea came from women in Columbus, Georgia, but the first group that acted on the idea were the women in Columbus, Mississippi. Both towns claim to be first, as do maybe 25 other towns, north and south. It was, I think, President Lyndon Johnson who declared that Waterloo, New York was the first. This claim marked the federal establishment of Memorial Day as a national holiday. The original purpose attached to Memorial Day was the wish to unite the divided nation. Many southern states, nursing anger and pain at defeat, or pride at the courage and sacrifice of their soldiers, or other deep-seated feelings and motivations, continue to celebrate a Confederate Memorial Day holiday, and some do so even today. Subsequent history since the holiday's beginnings and current political realities remind us that the goal of bringing people and the broken pieces of our nation together did not entirely succeed. Our first hymn today, Sibelius's This Is My Song, reminds us that pride of nation, of homeland, of adopted homeland, remains strong. We are often attached to the places we've been birthed or have lived for any period of time. I know how attached I've gotten to Bozeman after only almost 5 years. And I know that every time I moved until I came to Bozeman, I adopted loyalty to a new baseball team. The Tigers, the White Sox. Yes, you heard me, you Cubbies fans. I've said the White Sox. Because, you see, I lived on the south side of Chicago. And then when we moved to the east, the Yankees, and then the Red Sox, and then the Phillies, although how I ever became attached to a National League team, I will never know. And then back to my beloved White Sox. I was a Southsider in Chicago, and we banded together, resenting somewhat our second-class citizenship, for the North Side was more affluent, more homogeneous, and better treated by the powers of the city, and still is. It is not surprising when we sing This Is My Song that we may feel a sense of pride in our blue skies, our snow-capped mountains, our rivers, and Western culture. It's a normal part of identifying and loving the land where you are placed. And it is also true that we are believers in the oneness of reality, the relationship of all beings, even if sometimes we struggle with these concepts. So the second verse of our song makes sense to us as well. Other nations also have love for and pride in the beauty of their landscapes and the cultures they've embraced. Boundaries can make for healthy relationships when respected well. Boundaries can also provoke the awareness of not us. They are not us. Of difference, of conflict. None of us can really get into each other's minds, so we don't fully know another person, let alone ourselves or people in another culture. But we do know there are some with whom we get along really well, some whose differences are not so different, some with whom we have easy compatibility and understanding, some who we trust will respect our boundaries and we theirs. Even within a nation, there are vast differences in culture, and sometimes when we encounter those differences, we may resist them or feel oppressed by them, not understand them, be afraid of them. Or we may be desirous of learning more, of gaining greater understanding. Conflicts between people and between cultures, even within nations, are unsurprising, even if we sometimes experience them as surprising and even shocking. Conflicts between nations, whether about resources, power, identity, or something else, are sometimes seen as inevitable and often last a very long time. And today we see conflicts that might seem insurmountable between would-be nation states and groups, such as ISIS or Al-Qaeda, often violently seizing power. So my question is, can remembering and compassion help in the building of bridges? One thing I know for sure, the building of bridges of reconciliation and understanding is not a once and for all time event. It takes time. It takes sustained commitment and sometimes a willingness to take risks, which means it takes courage. One step forward, two back, two forward, one back. As the theologian Reinhold Niebuhr wrote in his book, The Irony of American History, nothing that is worth doing can be achieved in our lifetime. Therefore, we are saved by hope. Nothing which is true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history, and therefore, we must be saved by faith, the faith of possibility. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we must be saved by love. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as it is from our standpoint. I've noticed that. Therefore, we must be saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness. And one thing I believe is that remembering and compassion can strengthen hope and keep up courage. Why? Because we can learn from the remembered actions and compassionate witness of those gone before us, as well as from steps we have taken in our own pasts. And we can learn from the compassionate, courageous bridge building of those still living, whose stories we have heard, whose courage we have seen. The women in Columbus, Mississippi back in 1866 who chose to place flowers not only on their own sons' graves but on those of their former enemies, they did this because they could imagine the grief of women they did not know. Israeli, Jewish, and Palestinian people who live at and are citizens of the village of Wahat El Salam, Neve Shalom, which means oasis of peace in English, they demonstrate this kind of courageous, compassionate bridge building as they struggle together over the issues in that region. And Jewish, Muslim, and Christian colleagues for peace who are members of the Abrahamic Reunion, some of whose folks came to Bozeman this past year, they strive for understanding and peace in the Holy Lands, and in the process, they buck the official stances of their own governments and do so only with words and acts of love and solidarity. Unitarian Universalist individuals and congregations who stand with Muslim brothers and sisters, and those you use who practice compassionate bridge building at the borders, bring help and hope and solace to immigrants, as well as reach out to those who serve to protect the borders. They perform these acts of solidarity in a time of increasing anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, and racist sentiment. Sentiment proclaimed and acted on sometimes with violent words and deeds. President Obama sought to build bridges, reaching out to the government and people of Cuba, attempting to heal decades-long and deep rifts between our so very close neighbors. And in light of the hate crime assassination of the 9 people sitting in a prayer circle praying at Mother Emanuel AME in Charleston, South Carolina, Governor Nikki Haley insisted that the state legislature approve the taking down of the Confederate flag from the state capitol, which they did with a unanimous vote. Haley took this step of bridge building, knowing that she would experience the enmity of many of her constituents, including people who normally supported her. She had the courage in that step of her compassionate convictions, despite the vitriolic anger that came her way. Remembering such stories of bridge building may inspire us to have the courage of our own compassionate convictions and take the risks. Today we remember those service people who died in our nation's wars. And today calls many also to remember those beloveds whom we have lost. Let today be a time to remember those who died on the other side of these wars, as the women in Columbus, Mississippi chose to do by placing flowers on their enemies' graves. Showing compassion across the differences can help heal wounds. When a Jewish or Palestinian soldier, child of the people of Wahat al-Salam, Never Shalom, is killed, the whole village mourns. When our president chose to go most recently to Hiroshima, Japan, which our nation bombed with an atomic bomb in 1945, hoping thereby to end the long world war, when he went to that place of our former enemy, where people still suffer the consequences of that bombing and still carry the pain of it, he reached out a hand of healing. I can imagine that this act of reaching out to build a bridge on the part of a U.S. president might be a healing force. The truth and reconciliation process that the South African government provided after apartheid officially ended gave the oppressors of apartheid the chance to own up to what they had done to collaborate with that awful regime, and gave the victims of it an opportunity to express the devastation of that regime on them and their families and people. And perhaps it was only that process, supported by the new president, Nelson Mandela, and encouraged by Bishop Desmond Tutu, that made it possible for that country to move forward, not perfectly, but with some possibly shared hope for the nation's future. And what does it take to build bridges across personal divisions in families, between co-religionists, perhaps in the workplace? I don't claim to have all the answers, certainly not for nations, nor for people and families, not even for myself. But I think of the 12-step programs that I and another family member have participated in, and I remember the power of admitting when we have hurt someone else, intentionally or unintentionally, and the power of listening to the admission when someone feels they have hurt us or been hurt by us. I remember the power of being open to hearing these things and the power of being willing to speak these things, being careful to pay attention to avoid causing further harm. I remember the healing that comes from taking responsibility, which belongs to me, and letting others take responsibility that belongs to them. We are part of systems. A rift is often the result not only of the other who we might be tempted to blame, but also of what we have done or left undone. Sometimes to build a bridge, we need the help of a trusted common friend or counselor or even a mediator. And not always can we build the bridges of compassion. One step forward, two steps back, two steps forward, one back. Who do you remember on this Memorial Day weekend? Perhaps a man or woman who gave the ultimate for the protection of his or her country. Perhaps someone you knew, or more than one person from another nation who suffered in a conflict between our nation and theirs. Perhaps someone who was easy to love and whom you greatly miss. Or perhaps someone with whom you may have struggled. It is not always easy to lay a flower on the grave of someone who may have hurt us or someone with whom we have been in conflict. Remembering them, the wholeness of them, may help us find more compassion in our hearts. Some of my uncles served in World War II and the Korean conflict. They did not die there, but went on to live long lives, and still today I remember them. And I remember my father, who was 4F because of polio as a child, but would have been conscientious objector if he could. He, a man who brought good values to his family and who died too young. He served his nation through public service of another kind. And I remember the women who held our nation up in wars by taking on civilian work earlier and later denied them. And today I invite us to remember the people whose bodies, hearts, and souls have been killed or injured through the violence of war wherever they made their homes. Why might we take time to remember on this weekend? Whom are you called to remember? How might you feel called to remember? What words, what steps, what ways to build bridges might be some future work? Amen.